We're not participating in the natural world. The natural world is participating in us. I cannot take a breath without the cellular structure of my body. I cannot digest food. I cannot see. I cannot hear. I cannot think. I cannot reason. And I probably can't even love. I am upheld and walking and breathing because of the myriad nations of microbes and beings that live within me to enable me to function as a human being. This idea of a separate human being is completely and utterly ludicrous.
Welcome to the Wild Minds podcast for people interested in health, nature-based therapy, and learning. We explore cutting-edge approaches that help us improve our relationship with ourselves, others, and the natural world. My name is Marina Robb. I'm an author, entrepreneur, forest school, outdoor learning, and nature-based trainer and consultant, and pioneer in developing green programs for the health service in the UK. You're listening to episode 27. My guest today is Peter Owen Jones. Peter is an ecological thinker and activist, as well as a celebrated BBC TV presenter. He was ordained as a parish priest in 1992 and has explored the world's religious and spiritual ideas and distilled essential wisdom for contemporary modern life. In this episode, we get to listen to some extracts from Peter's book, Conversations with Nature, as well as a rewording of the Lord's Prayer, which I think was quite fitting for Easter. I really enjoyed this rich conversation where we think about core religions and love and contemplate some insights into a life well lived while celebrating the magnificence of this reality. I hope you enjoy this episode. So welcome, Pete, to the Wild Minds podcast. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. What I'd like to do is I always start with some gratitude. And before I press record, I was particularly dropping into a feeling of gratitude for people that step out of the familiar and, as Brené Brown says, like step into the arena. So there's this feeling for me of feeling grateful for people that actually put their head a little bit out in the public eye and take a risk. And the risk, I guess, is that they can be criticized and, yeah, just have to face things from people that they might not want to. So I'm just grateful for the people that have the courage to do that. And I wonder whether you'd be happy in sharing any gratitude that comes at this moment.
Thank you. Yes, I, in light of what you have said, I am deeply grateful for the poets. I'm deeply grateful for the words of Rumi, the words of Hafiz, the Romantic movement poets, all of these men and women and the contemporary poets. I think we live in an age of dwindling hope, I think, and it is the poets that can tell us why this is happening and also enliven us as to what we might do to dance again. So I am deeply grateful to them today.
So perhaps that's the way in, is to ask you what it might mean to you to dance again.
That's a very fine question. I'd like to answer in two parts. I think one of the great seductions of getting old is that you believe your dancing days are done and that it becomes easier to retreat into some self-imposed order and some the rituals that we have constructed on a day-to-day basis. And therefore, what is sacrificed for that sense of order, which I think at the root of that is really an attempt to control. What gets sacrificed is spontaneity. What gets sacrificed is dancing. What gets sacrificed is staying up till 4 a.m. And so I would just like to say that it's a battle. It's always a battle because the body wants to sleep, but the heart wants to dance. And so I will kind of hang on to that tension for as long as I can. And secondly, winter is a time of melancholia, really. And we tend to shy away from that because it's associated with depression. It's associated with isolation. But melancholia can be an extraordinary teacher because it's there to tell us what we haven't dealt with. What is the shadows that we have our feet in? And therefore, I would say that melancholia is something to be welcomed and explored, not in the sense of depression, but in the sense of the quietude and the silence that that can offer if we're brave enough to accept that invitation.
Gosh, there are two very meaningful responses, actually. And one speaks to me about, you mentioned the word control and order. And then what that makes me think about is whether or not we can find a way to be with control and order and at the same time, perhaps disorder or the sense of dancing feels like it doesn't want to kind of stay within confines in some way. And I'm wondering about some of the ways that we can be with both. And also because actually this podcast is likely to be released, if you like, in the spring, which is interesting. And we haven't talked yet about your kind of faith, your Christian faith. And I have been reading some literature around this idea of order and disorder and then resurrection. So I've already said quite a lot of things, but you provoke this in me, you know, this kind of starting to talk about this. And I wonder if you'd speak to some of that before we perhaps go to your second point.
Our whole lives, or since the dawn of consciousness, I think we have, or I can only speak for myself. I cannot speak for those who have trod this path before me. It's a great seduction, I think, order. It's there in the Bible, writ large. I don't ever proselytize because that's just not my way, and I'm always slightly suspicious of those that want to convince me. But, you know, it's very fundamental religious belief is essentially based on order, whether that is Christian, whether that is Jewish, whether that is Islamic or Buddhist or Jain. It is all of those fundamental beliefs are based on a strict adherence to order. And again, I go back to the beautiful words of Rumi. I go back to the beautiful words of Christ. And here were two human beings that really kind of disavowed order. They said, plug into love, let go of your addiction to order. And it's far harder to tune into love than it is to adopt order. And as much as I grapple with that and fail consistently, I would still say that our job as human beings is to tune into love. And that's going to cause chaos in terms of our addiction to order. Anyone who has fallen in love will testify to that, I think.
So, as you know, this podcast is called the Wild Minds Podcast. And in some ways, the reason that I chose that in the end was something that links to what you're speaking of. And I don't pretend to have the answers to any of this, but this sense of order, chaos, and people seeing chaos as kind of wild, you know, and being scary and not taking form or controllable in some ways. And I don't necessarily think that's what wild means, yet already in this conversation I'm feeling that you're almost, in me anyway, provoking, you know, by saying, well, look, let's point to love, that love doesn't necessarily stay in order. And so perhaps we need both. Perhaps there is something about both.
Yeah, I think we do need both. But I think with love comes responsibility. But I mean, I would place love above all. And with love comes responsibility. Those responsibilities, those individual responsibilities, may have been melted down into commandments and decrees and thou shalt nots and thou shalt. I think that is merely an attempt to say, not to rein love in, but to say, if you're going to take the path of love, then this also comes with huge responsibilities.
Ever felt unsure about writing risk-benefit assessments for outdoor sessions? You're not alone. It's a crucial legal requirement that many overlook, leaving them uncertain and unsure about risk. But imagine having the confidence and competence to navigate this seamlessly. That's where I come in. So head to theoutdoorteacher.com/risk to sign up now and master risk benefit assessments with ease. And lastly, if you're based in the UK, why not immerse yourself in nature with one of my transformative trainings in the beautiful landscapes of Sussex? Discover more about our in-person courses at circleofliferediscovery.com. So I'd love to talk to you about Christianity. And I know only what I was perhaps taught at school, and my mother was Catholic. I don't know that much about it, but I have a real sense, an opportunity in having you on this podcast to ask you questions that perhaps I've never asked somebody who, would you say, belongs to the church? I mean, I am I right in saying that you're an Anglican vicar? And what does that mean? Does that mean you believe in God? What does that mean?
I think that means something very different to every priest, whether you are a Buddhist monk or whether you are a Christian priest or whether you are an imam. And so every human being, I think, is going to answer that question differently. And I think it's much easier. Again, here we are with order. You know, the great temptation is to codify this and to say this is what it means. It might mean that for the person that's codified it, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm not that man. I'm not that woman. So what it means to me is going to be different to what it means to the parish priest in the next door parishes here.
Does that mean you don't want to define it for yourself?
I think as I've got older, I think my experience of it is that there are two main experiences. And the one is the presence of the divine is constant. It is ever present, and it is a live force that exists in everything. And the second is that it is fluid, and therefore any attempt to kind of set it in ink is only going to last for as long as it takes the ink to dry. After that, it might present itself as something different. Again, I think we each experience it in our own way. And therefore, there is, of course, you look at the Catholic, you know, the great edifice of the Catholic Church. You look at the great edifice of the Protestant Church. You know, there are so many strictures. There are so many do's. There are so many don'ts. Unless these are explored on an individual basis, they are essentially dry and meaningless, I think. They only take on meaning when they are lived, and when it hurts, and when it brings joy, and when it makes you dance until dawn.
So I think the way you're describing, the words you used is the sense of the divine in everything. And I feel that I come in and out of that. You know, I'll have moments when I will experience this awe, this wonder, this mystery. And as you say, it's such a personal thing that it can't be so easily defined. But I have an ongoing inquiry around the idea of having, you know, that everything is divine, and then a kind of religion or a set of rules, maybe this order that we started talking about, that feels that you belong or you don't belong. And the reason, and I think this is important, because in a way, the inquiry I have is a future, or a hope that I have is there is a future that we can all feel that we have a place in, that we can participate with. And I feel that that's just seems to be so important, because as I grew up, you know, and had certain ideas about a God that perhaps was more punishing or more judgmental, I didn't feel like I could be, I was part of that, right? So I think there's a part of me now that's, you know, having you on the podcast that can kind of go, so how can, you know, is there a possibility in your eyes to come from incredibly different places or understandings and yet share something in common that can bring us together? Do you see that or not? Do they divide? Do they bring us together, these ideas?
At the moment, they don't bring us together. They tear us apart. And there's no point in pretending otherwise or coming up with kind of sweet words on that front. My eldest daughter was berating me the other day, just saying to me, you know, you are part of the problem. Your Christianity, your church, that building, and you know, all the rituals and expectations around it are part of the problem. And she, you know, she looked me in the eye and said, where do we all meet? Where does the Buddhist meet the Christian? Where does the atheist meet the Muslim? And she's right. She's right. But again, you know, this is an inheritance of culture and the dreadful notion of country and the dreadful notion of nation. And I can only say that at the moment, what the vision that you have laid out there, which is beautiful, is a seed that needs water and good earth. And yes, as long as we are prepared to uphold our differences, we will remain mired within them. And I can only say that my daughter's challenge to me hit me very hard, and she's right. But at the basis of the religions of love, and I will just call them the religions of love, there is that call to love your neighbor as yourself. And if we can begin there and not resort to othering, then we have a hope. then there is hope. As long as we are prepared to define ourselves by our differences, our apparent differences. I would also just add to that, is an Israeli heart different to a Palestinian heart? Is an Afghan heart different to an English heart? You know, these are ludicrous notions. And as long as we are encouraged and prepared to believe that they are different, then we will remain these warring little factions addicted to our own ideologies. And it is that which causes so much pain and heartache and increasing terror. So I'll leave it at that, I think.
Yeah, I feel that you've spoken of already in right and wrong, and we do that all the time, don't we? That something is right and then the other thing is wrong, and it's that othering that you spoke to, that, you know, while something might feel absolutely true and right, it doesn't necessarily make the other wrong. And that's so hard, isn't it? Because we, and this is stuff that I've read and thought about, just how it's so hard for us to see beyond what we can see. And that's one of the wonderful things, I think, about having these conversations and meeting people from different lands and cultures and different religions, is that they give us, if we're willing, the opportunity to see something that we just hadn't seen. And that's the other reason why I felt so excited about speaking to you, because, you know, I've seen a few of your wonderful documentaries where you go as you are, yes, with your culture and your trappings, whatever they may be, but you go into quite extreme and not beautiful other places and eat bread with other people, and it seems to me the ones that I saw, and I haven't seen all of them, that you were able to both have your own sense of what's true for you, but at the same time, you know, be very open. What does that take to do that, both on a personal level, but also, you know, in a culture that's holding both?
I think on this island, and I'm only going to call it an island, you know, we're in an incredibly privileged place, because increasingly this is what is termed, or this land, this little piece of land on this planet, especially within our cities, incredibly multicultural, multiracial, multi-faith. And let's see what emerges, because I do not believe that the old lines in the sand can hold. Let's see what new ideas are fermented. And some of them are going to be beautiful and some of them will be ugly. But this is the cauldron. This is the melting pot. We're in it. And if there's, I have great hope, and I feel incredibly excited to be living now in this time when it's quite clear that this osmosis, this mixing is taking place. I haven't seen anything that has made me weep as a result. But look, it's coming, because I don't think the old lines, well, I know the old lines cannot hold. And that includes the old, you know, the old barricades that I find myself within as well.
But in a way, having read Richard Rohr, who I know you've read, I've had the opportunity to revisit some of the ideas of how the old can be totally mistold, if you like. And I'd love to just share or explore something around Jesus and his life. And because I've been so surprised how I didn't how when I was given another opportunity to look at some of the teachings, that I was like, I hadn't even realized that. As I said a little while ago, that, you know, I was brought up with this sense of being policed by God and this sense of, I don't know, Jesus was on a cross. You know, I didn't really know what that meant. And I wonder, in the context of some of what we're saying, you know, what do you think has been misunderstood about that? And is there anything that, you know, you could share with us to give us a slightly different view, maybe a new view on what that could have meant or means to us?
I was in an incredibly privileged position to encounter and meet with men and women of many different faiths. And I am a follower of what Jesus taught. And I'm only just now beginning to kind of scratch the surface in terms of understanding. And I have not found in my life any more radical teaching on love and what it is to love and to be loved than the words spoken or apparently spoken by that man. I have found no more opening, emptying teaching there. And I think you're right. It's very easy. You walk into a church and you're confronted with a man in a stained glass window nailed to a cross. Incredibly brutal picture and scene to behold. And I often wonder why we've done that, because I think we've done that because of inclusion. I think the purpose of that, or at least the theology around that, which I still find slightly strange and abhorrent, is that this man suffered and died for my forgiveness, because I'm a pretty rotten human being. And therefore, if I think the idea is that if we can be, I can be forgiven for the terrible things that I have done. And I can only be forgiven because of that one act. I'm not actually sure that I buy into that completely, but I understand the reasoning behind it. And I don't, to me, that's not, you know, that's not the big deal. The crucifixion is not the big deal. To me, the big deal is the Sermon on the Mount. You know, blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth, and so on. That, to me, is the very big deal. The kind of the theatre that goes on around that is not so important to me. It is what he said, love your enemies. You know, love your enemies? Are you real about this? Love your neighbor. And then all that he speaks of, I have found no greater teaching on love. And therefore, I'm happy to stand where I stand right now, although I fail at every single point in every single day. Look, I mean, I just want to add, it's not meant to be easy. It's not meant to be cozy and straightforward and comfortable. You know, why on earth should it be any of those things if it is worth anything? This isn't just the kind of Protestant saying, beat me, then I'll learn. Give me pain and I'll learn. It's actually, no. Are you going to take this? If you take this journey, you will be challenged to your core on your understanding and your capacity and your ability and willingness to love in the face of pain.
Yeah. And in a kind of supervision session, I was exploring the idea of punishment and how we often unconsciously punish others, or maybe I unconsciously punish others for for something that I didn't receive, or whatever that might be. And it was strange because, again, that having not, you know, following any particular religion, what came up was that image of Jesus and this idea that at least I'm still working on it. Like you say, some of these things might take me years to understand, but this sense of that he was saying, actually, forgive them because they don't understand, right? This kind of sense of we don't need to punish others. We can love others. And I feel that this message is a very profound message, because if you are suffering, like you said, and you feel the pain, it's so in a way a relief valve, as I experienced, to blame somebody else, you know, to make somebody else the cause of my suffering. And if I ever have the possibility of doing my inner work enough to somehow find in myself the place where I don't feel I have to make the other the problem, but actually can come somehow work that inside myself, then I think maybe I'm touching some of what you're talking about, you know?
I'm just going to kind of give you a reworking of the Lord's Prayer, because I think within that there is one line that speaks very clearly to what we're talking about. Our Father, our Mother of this planet, of the universe, of every leaf and star and sea and stone, hallowed be your name. Your reality be made known in all things, in all times, and in all places. Please give us what we need each day. Please forgive us when we wound others, when we scheme to wound, when we wound this beautiful planet. Please help us to forgive those who have wounded us. And this is the line: be with us in the shadows of our choosing, and guide us in service to love. These shadows, this capacity for blame, this capacity for revenge, this capacity for anger, these are choices that I make. I choose to stand there at that particular time and throw those particular stones. This is my choice. It's not the fault of the other. I could choose love at that point, but if I choose to scheme to wound, then I have a lot to learn.
Thank you so much for that. And to choose not to throw the stones somewhere, I feel that I need to have enough sense of love, you know, within myself. It's something about that love within, and because the reaction, the release of throwing the stone or the bad words or the reaction, it does something that if I, you know, when I can pause myself and generate more love in me, then there's more possibility of me not harming the other. That's what I would add to that reflection. And in some ways it brings us to that second point that you said at the beginning, and I can't for the life of me remember how you said it, but it is about somewhere walking with that shadow, with the discomfort, isn't it? It's you said to be able to dance, but to dance alongside or with all of what is as well.
Yeah, dance with your shadow. Go on. No, that's not easy. That's not easy. But again, here we are back with the man. Love your neighbor as yourself. Very, you know, oh, I'm a good guy, you know, I love my neighbor. Do you love yourself? Oh, that's the tough one.
Sure is.
Loving your neighbors, you know, that's an act of generosity most of the time. Loving yourself, wow. No, that's the one that needs work, I think.
Especially if you don't believe or can't feel that you're worthy of that love, for that forgiveness, as you talked about earlier. I think that's very hard. It's very, very hard.
Well, again, yeah, I mean, this is normally the result of of wounding and trauma. And this is the result of having terrible pain and abuse inflicted upon you. And, you know, healing from that is very hard. But that's the journey for all of us. The journey for all of us is to heal, not to carry these wounds and not to inflict them on others. But that's the loving yourself part.
So with that, I'd love to turn the conversation towards the natural world. You've written a lovely little book called Conversations with Nature. And I would love just to, well, actually, I would like you to read it, but I didn't ask you to bring a copy. So I'm not sure if you've got a copy. Have you got a copy?
I have.
Oh, well, would you mind? It's a little cheeky of me, but on page 69, you have one of your pieces of writing is called The Oak Speaks of Sanctuary. And I just wonder whether you would at least read the first paragraph. Well, read as much as you'd like to read, but there's something, when I read it, I really felt about, well, it warmed my heart, and it also made me feel that you spoke to something that I could relate to, I suppose.
The giving of sanctuary is written into the code of life. Planet Earth is a sanctuary, a life world in the midst of space. The stone gives sanctuary to the moss. The soil gives sanctuary to the seed. The river gives sanctuary to the reed. Silence gives sanctuary to sound. You share this sanctuary with all life, with every grove, with every reef, with every moor and breath. A human being is called to consciously to uphold and nurture the reality of sanctuary, to make it known and to bring it to life.
Gosh, I feel like I would just love to listen to you carrying on there. And I suppose I wanted you to share that because of that sense of intimacy and leaning into and peace. It's so wonderful. It makes me feel that we're just entangled and intertwined. And I guess it gives me a feeling of safety.
Yeah, but I mean, look where we are. You know, we're on this blue and green globe lit by a star, circling round this star. We're having this conversation now on this place in the midst of space. How extraordinary, how intensely beautiful is just that second, that reality. All the mess and all the dirt and all the shame and all the pain is never overwhelmed by that one constant reality that we're here, we're doing it, we're living it, we're breathing it, and it's going to be messy and it's not going to be straightforward, but here we are. So let's love and let's dance and let's take the challenges that are laid down before.
Perhaps we've forgotten to dance and to be in this absolute wonder and awe that you've just spoken to, you know?
I think we're so tied up with nationality that we lose sight of the incredible gift of humanity. Here we are. It's happening. It's real. The quantum physicists may disagree with us entirely, and long may they thrive. But for the time being, here we are, and what a ride!
Would you read on page 73 again, just a paragraph or two from that piece of writing?
The moss speaks of intimacy. Intimacy is the vessel, the first language of every life world. It is intimacy that holds life in being, your life, my life. Every stem, every seed, every fin, every hair, every song. Intimacy is the child of devotion. The land embraces the lake. The soil is devoted to the seed. The sapling devoted to the star. The moss devoted to rain. The sea embraces the urchin, the shark, the glistening fish. The sand embraces the dead and broken shells. This is communion.
I'm warmed, I guess, again, just by this feeling of what it feels like when you feel intimacy, you know, this sense of this, I guess, kinship with the natural world. And I wonder if there's anything that you can share from these conversations you've had with nature, of any kind of pieces of wisdom that perhaps we out there in the world could benefit from hearing. You know, how can humans actually be participating in this great wonder in a way that can really benefit life?
We're not participating in the natural world. The natural world is participating in us. I cannot take a breath without the cellular structure of my body. I cannot digest food. I cannot see. I cannot hear. I cannot think. I cannot reason. And I probably can't even love. I am upheld and walking and breathing because of the myriad nations of microbes and beings that live within me to enable me to function as a human being. This idea of a separate human being is completely and utterly ludicrous. As I have said, I am kept upright and breathing by the myriads of members of other worlds, of other houses, just getting on with their stuff to enable me to speak and drink and eat and breathe. I am a multitude. I am not a singularity. I owe my very existence to every other life form that exists within me. And therefore, that in itself is communion. Everything exists in communion. Nothing can exist without the reality of the other. Everything is shared. Everything is given. Maybe when human beings learn that, we will start to be kind and to nurture this incredible planet that we are on for such a short time. Because we are nothing. We don't exist without the gift of all the other life forms around us.
Well, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so much for your time and all that you've shared today. And I will spend some time really sitting with so many of these themes. So thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you, Marina.
Thanks for speaking to me, Peter. Join me next week for episode 28, when I'll be discussing themes of love and punishment and touching on these universal ideas of forgiveness and spirituality, as well as simply celebrating the springtime. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wild Minds podcast. If you enjoyed it and want to help support this podcast, please subscribe, share, and leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. Your review will help others find the show. To stay updated with the Wild Minds podcast and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can visit theoutdoorteacher.com or follow me on Facebook at The Outdoor Teacher UK and LinkedIn, Marina Robb. The music was written and performed by Jeff Robb. See you next week, same time, same place. Ever wondered about the guitar music in my podcast? Surprise, it's my husband, Jeff Robb. His show, The Music of Trees, is hitting the road across England and Wales, blending tree stories with Woodland Melodies. Catch him live in May, June and July. Tickets available at jeffrobb.com/shows.